This is Monday, June 19th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Coming up, the British Prime Minister Theresa May had to repeat this kind of announcement again in London.
This morning, our country woke to news of another terrorist attack on the streets of our capital city.
VOA's chief European correspondent Luis Ramirez is standing by in our London bureau with the latest on that. Also ahead, the United States has shot down a Syrian jet fighter over Syria. And multiple investigations are underway into a deadly collision of a U.S. Navy ship and a much larger cargo vessel off the coast of Japan. All on International Edition. It has happened again in London. A van collided with pedestrians outside of a mosque there early today, injuring 10 people in what the Prime Minister said was quite clearly an attack on Muslims.
This was an attack on Muslims near their place of worship. And like all terrorism, in whatever form, it shares the same fundamental goal. It seeks to drive us apart and to break the precious bonds of solidarity and citizenship that we share in this country. We will not let this happen.
Joining us live from our London bureau is VOA's chief European correspondent, Luis Ramirez. Hi, Luis. How are you?
Hey, Ira.
Hi, and, you know, this attack bore the same routine of a lot of previous attacks, but this one was carried out against people leaving a Muslim place of worship. What happened?
Well, from the police, the word is that this happened just after midnight, in which a rented van, drove through the bus lanes in this area of North London near this the mosque. This was right after midnight service. We were talking about Ramadan, where people had just broken the fast, were on the streets in large numbers. The van drove onto the sidewalk and slammed into a large group of pedestrians. Now, two people were treated at the scene. What happened was that the driver was pulled from the van, surrounded by people, and then what happened was that some people were trying to beat him. Others stepped in to protect him, and among those protecting him was an imam who held him until police arrived. Police took him away to a hospital where he was going to receive a psychiatric evaluation. And then we have the latest word is that he has, in fact, been charged with terrorism charges. We do not know his identity yet. All we know is that he is 47 years old. And according to witnesses, shouted as he was being pulled from the truck that he wanted to kill all Muslims and that he had done his bit. Very quickly, a sign of not only a terrorist act, a hate crime, allegedly here.
Well, what's been the reaction so far of officials there and what seems to be the mood of London residents? Unfortunately, this is nothing new for them.
Unfortunately, it has become, I don't want to say routine, but certainly something people have seen before and are certainly not getting used to. I just came back from the scene there at Finsbury Park, and I'll tell you that there are a great deal of emotions being expressed, and probably what's most poignant is hearing from area residents. So we're talking about people who are second, third generation British born, who are Muslim, and who say, who told me things like that they are feeling increasingly less welcome, less comfortable in the country where they were born. At the same time, aside from these feelings of trauma and anger, there is a great deal drive to have some form of unity after. And I did hear, along with those remarks of anger and of trauma, I did hear a great desire among many people to unite as a result of this, not be divided by it. And that's exactly been the call from leaders like Theresa May and the mayor, Sadiq Khan.
They're using the words, but what in reality can be done except to increase the police presence?
And that's exactly what Theresa May has said she will do today, increase a police presence at mosques. Now, the question that many people are asking is that the type of country that they want to live in, where this has to happen? Well, the events of the last 4 months have shown that increasingly, as tensions deepen between Britain's non-Muslim majority and its rapidly growing Muslim minority, attacks that are taking place, that there may be no other choice but to do this.
Now, this latest attack is not the only piece of breaking news involving Great Britain over the past 24 hours or so. As we know, also in London, police now say there's 79 people presumed dead from last week's fire at a public housing building, and there's all kinds of criticism flying around on that.
I'm sorry, Ira, I am having trouble hearing you. Can you please repeat?
We're talking about the number of people presumed dead from last week's fire at a public housing building. 79 people presumed dead, and there is growing public anger. What can you say about that?
Well, that's just another one of Theresa May's troubles these days. And so the big complaint here is that the government has been slow to react to people's concerns after this. Many people left homeless. The government has promised a payment of £5,500 to each person who was displaced as a result of this fire. But still, there are bigger questions on why the government, which the local government, is the landlord of this building. This is public housing we're talking about, did not heed their complaints about fire safety. These complaints had been raised repeatedly, and so there's a great deal of anger as to why there was such a slow action. Theresa May also drew more criticism after she delayed in meeting with the victims. Now, I will say that she very quickly did go to the scene and meet with emergency responders, but it was the fact that she did not meet with victims until later that stoked a great deal of anger.
Well, and also we can talk about Brexit, because in Brussels, talks were set to begin today on Britain's exit from the European Union. What's happening there? I think Louise is having some trouble hearing us. So we'll try to get to that. There you go, Louise. Can we hear you?
Okay, I think I have you again. You were asking me about Brexit.
That's correct.
If Theresa May did not have enough on her plate today, Brexit talks did get underway. This, in a way, is a positive for her, because it was only a few days ago that domestic political issues here had prompted some to say these talks might be delayed. They did get underway in Brussels. The UK's Brexit minister just moments ago said that the talks were positive, that some agreements were reached on the timetable. And the main issues going into these talks on the part of the European Union, their big concerns are the future of the 3 million European or EU nationals who live on British soil. What will happen to them once Britain is no part of the European Union?
Well, with the whole list of things happening in London, Louise is late for dinner, so it's time you find a restaurant someplace. Thanks, Louise. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Ira.
That's VOA's chief European correspondent, Luis Ramirez. Now, there is another story coming out of Paris. A car has slammed into a police van in the Paris's Champs-Élysées shopping district. In a tweet, police say the Champs-Élysées situation is under control. No one from the police force or the public was injured. The driver of the car is most probably dead, according to France's Interior Ministry, Pierre-Henri Brandet, who also said he believed the attack was deliberate. The bomb squad is securing the scene, said Brandet, who said that the car had exploded. France's counterterrorism prosecutor has opened an investigation into the incident, the office announced in the hours after the crash. Andrew Palshevsky is here with all this news about terror attacks and over again, and terror in the news all over. A lot of people are blaming at least social media for at least a little bit of this. Anything showing up? What's happening?
Social media is getting quite a lot of the blame, and it's not just from people out there who say that it's become a platform for terrorists to radicalize or to communicate, but we even saw, as Luis was talking about, Prime Minister Theresa May, She came out with French President Emmanuel Macron, and they talked about how social media needs to be held responsible for this radicalization, even calling for as much as 50 million euros in fines for some of these major social networks because of the activity that goes on there, saying they should be held liable for that.
So all of a sudden, the social media networks are saying they're doing something, right?
Well, they've been doing things for a while, but it's kind of a slow rollout. As problems pop up, they release different ways to deal with them. So we've seen Twitter do this in the past with a lot of accounts, ISIS-related accounts that they've shut down. But in the past few days, we've seen Facebook late last week announce that they're going to use artificial intelligence to find and remove terrorist videos and images, actually use algorithms to determine if a video is terror-related, if it has terror imagery in it, and even prevent people from uploading it. So not just removing the content, but blocking it before it can even go up on the social network. And then you have Google, which owns YouTube. They're talking about cracking down on extremist videos, trying to remove extremist videos that are on that site. And this one element of this I thought was fascinating. They're using online advertising to target would-be jihadists. And what those ads do is steers them away from radicalized videos and pushes them towards or focuses them towards anti-terror videos. So as much as we talk about social networks removing this content, and it seems like it's very cut and dry, you just delete a video if it's something problematic, they're taking it even a step further in some ways that I don't think we could have even thought of just a few short years ago. For instance, this use of artificial intelligence.
Yeah, but again, that brings up the question about free speech and who makes the subjective opinion, who comes up with a subjective opinion as to what is radical and what is not.
Well, that's part of the issue, too, that they're looking to address. And Google today, when they put out this list of four things that they're doing to combat extremist videos, they did acknowledge that. They said there are some videos that people will put up on Google that may not be explicit extremism or call for violence, but may be racist or sexist or go against other groups. And what they're doing for that, acknowledging that it is free speech, even if people are going to object to it, they're leaving those videos up, but they're putting warnings on those videos to alert people to the views expressed there. So it is a very fine line, and it's a very gray area as far as trying to shut down some of this content and stop this content, but also not getting involved in free speech debates.
We'd like to know what you think about this and other things that come up in our conversations with Andrew and me. And people can get in touch with you by...
You can find me on Twitter at APAL, APAL. And also, I did a video today on this subject for our Digital Daily series, and you can find that at hashtag VOA on Twitter or at facebook.com/hashtag VOA.
Well, I'm making a program decision now. You come up with anything tomorrow, we'll put it up on the air, okay?
Sounds like a plan.
Andrew Palczewski here on International Edition. Among the top stories in the world, a van collided with pedestrians outside of a London mosque early today, injuring 10 people in what police say was quite clearly an attack on Muslims. After an American fighter jet shot down a Syrian military plane, Russia says it will now treat all U.S.-led coalition planes in the air over Syria and west of the Euphrates as targets. Representatives from Britain and the European Union are meeting to begin the complicated process of negotiating Britain's exit from the EU. French President Emmanuel Macron's party and its allies will have a strong majority parliament after winning 60% of the seats in Sunday's second and final round of elections. And U.S. and Japanese authorities say they're investigating why personnel on a U.S. destroyer and a massive Japanese merchant vessel took nearly an hour to report the deadly collision that killed 7 sailors on the destroyer. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
A new study published online in the journal Preventative Medicine finds children and teenagers are less physically active than previously thought. The paper also shows the only increase in activity are among young adults over age 20 to about 35. From that point through midlife and into older adulthood, the researchers from the Johns Hopkins University Bloomberg School of Public Health say that they found physical activity levels steadily declined. To make their findings, the researchers used activity trackers to study the daily physical movements of more than 12,000 participants. The study authors say that while they found alarmingly low activity levels among those at the end of adolescence, by the time they turned 19, however, their physical activity dropped to levels comparable to 60-year-olds. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
The U.S. Navy has identified all seven sailors killed when their destroyer, the USS Fitzgerald, collided early Saturday with a Philippine-flagged container ship off the coast of Japan. The bodies of the seven were found in flooded berthing compartments when the ship returned to port, and the divers were able to access the damaged areas of the 154-meter-long ship. None of the 21-member crew of the 222-meter ACX Crystal was injured. Now, the accident occurred about 100 kilometers southwest of Yokosuka in a busy shipping channel that serves as a gateway to major Japanese container ports in Tokyo and Yokohama. The commander of the U.S. 7th Fleet, Vice Admiral Joseph Akoin, Sunday indicated the ship's seaworthiness was put in doubt after that accident.
Two compartments that house 116 of the crew are in those compartments. And it was a significant impact to the side of the ship. And you can't see most of the damage. The damage is mostly underneath the waterline, and it's a large gash near the keel of the ship. And so the water flow was tremendous. There wasn't a lot of time in those spaces that were open to the sea. And as you can see now, the ship is still listing. And so they had to fight the ship to keep it above the surface.
Fitzgerald's commander, Bryce Benson, was among those evacuated from the ship by helicopter, but later released from a U.S. naval hospital in Yokosuka. Russia says it will now treat all U.S.-led coalition planes in the air over Syria west of the Euphrates as targets, and that after an American fighter jet shot down a Syrian military plane. In a statement on Monday, the Russian military also said it's suspending use of a hotline that was set up to prevent any accidental military engagement. The command of the coalition forces did not use the established communication channel for preventing incidents in Syrian airspace, according to the Russian military. That a day after a U.S. fighter jet shot down a Syrian plane for bombing U.S.-backed fighters battling the Islamic State. The Pentagon said Sunday a Syrian Su-22 dropped bombs on coalition-partnered fighters near the town of Tabqa. U.S. Super Hornet immediately responded and shot down the Syrian plane. No word on the pilot or any other casualties. Earlier, Syrian forces attacked coalition fighters in Jadin, wounding a number of fighters and driving them from the town. Coalition aircraft stopped the pro-regime forces from advancing on Jadin. The coalition said it had contacted Russian commanders to set up a deconfliction zone to prevent the fighting from worsening. The Pentagon says its actions Sunday were within the rules of engagement and collective self-defense of coalition forces, is how they termed it. The coalition does not seek to fight the Syrian regime, Russian or pro-regime forces, it said, but it will not hesitate to defend coalition or partner forces from any threat whatsoever. You are listening to International Edition. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. This is VOA, the voice of America. Probes into Russian... Let's move to a different story now. A new biographical film looks at the life, career, and death of the rap artist Tupac Shakur. As VOA's David Byrd tells us, All Eyes on Me comes more than 20 years after Shakur was gunned down in Las Vegas.
The film follows Tupac Shakur's rise from his early days in New York to his place as one of the most influential artists, poets, and musicians of all time. Demetrius Shipp Jr. stars as the rap icon. He says he looked at all the influences that made Shakur the man he was.
We studied, you know, the things that he was into, the Shakespeare. We studied the Black Panther Party, which is what he grew up in. I read the books that he read, you know, all in trying to get into the mind, the world of Tupac and who he was.
Shipp, a newcomer to Hollywood, says that the producers have not glossed over some of the tougher times in Tupac Shakur's life, including his imprisonment on sexual assault charges.
It's not trying to sugarcoat anything that he went through, because this is a man, and you got to understand that he was only 23, 24 when he was going through some of this stuff, and... You know, no man can say at 23 and 24 and 25 that you were matured and at your sharpest and you had it all together.
Cat Graham stars as Shakur's longtime friend, actress Jada Pinkett, who later married rapper Will Smith. Graham says Shakur played a big role in determining how she lives her life, particularly as an activist.
I would look at different artists like Tupac, and I would see that he was having these very important conversations, and he would be challenging the media, challenging the system, challenging society, and really putting his beliefs, his views out there. And I would say that he's still somebody that really inspires me to do that today.
Annie Ilanza plays Shakur's girlfriend, Kidada Jones. She says that doing the film has made her think a lot about her legacy and what she is passing on to the next generation.
Yeah, you definitely reevaluate yourself for sure. You know, just the impact of this that this man has and has or had and has on the world on such a grander scale. You think, well, what's my legacy? What's my impact? What am I leaving behind? And how can I be just as powerful as a pioneer in this world and make an impact on something or someone?
Director Benny Boom says he hopes that audiences get to see the real Tupac and hear his message even decades after his death.
And we hope people pay attention to the film, and when they come out of it, there's jewels, we call them jewels that we drop in the movie for those kids that could be on the border of you know, the street life or turning right. And we hope that people see this as a cautionary tale.
All Eyes on Me also stars Denai Guerra as Tupac's mother, Afeni Shakur, Jamal Woolard as Notorious B.I.G., also known as Biggie Smalls, and Dominic L. Santana as controversial record executive Suge Knight. All Eyes on Me is rated R for language and drug use throughout, violence, some nudity, and sexuality. In Washington, I'm David Byrd.
You've been listening to International Edition. Find us at voanews.com. You can like us on Facebook at VOA Now and follow us on Twitter at VOA_IE. Thanks for being with us. Our thanks to Director Patrice Martin, our engineer Thomas Blondet. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The six-month campaign by the Iraqi army to take back the city of Mosul from ISIS is coming to an end. The terrorist group captured Mosul and looked toward capturing Baghdad itself, but has since lost most of Mosul to Iraq's armed forces and is clinging to a handful of pockets within the far western reaches of the city. It is now just a matter of time before the last ISIS extremists are killed or chased from the city. But as they prepare for a last stand, the terrorists are ever more brutal in their treatment of Mosul's civilian population. According to the Office of the United Nations High Commissioner for Human Rights, ISIS has killed over 200 people in the last 3 weeks. Entire families, including children, have been murdered by the terrorists. Zaid Ra'ad al-Hussein, the High Commissioner for Human Rights, said shooting children as they tried to run to safety with their families. Really, there are no words of condemnation strong enough. Clearly, these amount to war crimes. ISIS has used human shields in the past and killed people who have tried to leave the city, but now the slaughter and other abuses are escalating. ISIS is locking entire families in basements with no food or water and welding the doors shut and booby-trapping streets and houses with explosives to prevent people from leaving. So we are working very closely with Iraqi security forces on the plan to ensure that we defeat the remaining fighters in Mosul, while also doing our utmost to protect the civilian life that Daesh is so aggressively trying to take, said Special Presidential Envoy Brett McGurk. But it's a really important reminder of what's happening right now, of the true face of this enemy. They are mass murderers. They are barbaric. They are a threat to all civilization, all humanity, and those civilians in Mosul trapped, being held hostage by ISIS, We will do everything we can in supporting the Iraqi security forces to free them.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.